Costs to originate keep rising, even with more technology in the industry. The problem is the core platform. A new LOS can re-architect the process around data, not humans moving paper files. Vesta has built this LOS, and you can learn more at vesta.com.
Welcome, everyone. My guest today is lead analyst Logan Motoshami to talk about the economic impact of the NAR lawsuit settlements, as well as new home sales and pending home sales. Logan, welcome to the podcast.
It is wonderful to be here, Sarah. Of course, I am still traveling and this time speaking at an event at the California Association of Realtors today. So another hotel shot.
Great, as always, to have you on. Thanks for making the time. And, you know, let's start with realtors. So you're at a realtor event. Let's start with sort of the economic impact of the settlements, of the NAR settlement. We've looked at it from a lot of different angles, but I would love to get your take on what you think, you know, what that looks like for on the economic side.
So as a data analyst, I only think about this, what could be the economic impact for the housing data. And I always believe that whenever you have such a big change, you need time. You need at least most likely 12 to 18 months to actually really see the material changes, just like how a scientist would actually need to run tons of tests to see if, you know, the hypothesis is correct or not. But for me, my first initial reaction is, okay, the seller is going to keep more money. Most sellers are buyers. And then that seller who's going to buy is going to be on the other side of the equation. And the other side of the equation has a huge question mark on it. Because, you know, when I think of, you know, housing in the past few decades, the housing market is very subsidized by the government. And prices moving up so much has also created a lot of nested equity. That nested equity is also basically a housing stimulus, in a sense. It's a buyer program. We never talk about it in that way because we never needed to, because it was always this, the seller paid. But if the equation now means that the buyer does not know if he needs to bring money to the table, then that changes the variable. And the reason I say this, you know, we're already seeing right away some home sellers refusing to pay the buyer's commission. And I was, you know, and I was waiting to see, like, how do these stories play out? And it happened very quickly. I think it was a New York Times article as well, where the buyer had to come in with 2.5% of the commission to the buyer agent. And the seller says, we're not paying at all. So that was an additional, I think, $10,000 that they have to bring into closing. That actually matters, you know. It matters to those that are kind of, you know, on the margin or don't have a lot of money to bring in. Of course, a little bit well-to-do buyers might be able to manage something like that. But that to me is a material change, and it's a question mark to me, because I don't know how many sellers are going to go in that area where they refuse to pay. I don't know if the sellers are just going to go, hey, listen, we'll pay 1%, and, you know, the buyer has to come up with another 1%. I just don't know what the numbers will look like until this gets tested. But I know this for sure, that the buyer now, which has basically been stimulated, you know, in terms of not needing to bring extra money into a transaction, now has to deal with this question mark. And, you know, the other variables that you could think about, I know there are some people saying that, well, this can bring home prices down.
Come on. I do not buy that for one second.
What do we always say about sellers?
They're greedy. They want all the money they can get.
Oh, my dear Lord, they are greedy. Okay. You know, I mean, my whole team higher rates thing in February of 2021, which I got blasted on, but the whole concept is, I don't trust human beings when they're doing everything in their own self-interest for the greater good of the stability of the housing market, right? We saw that. This is why when inventory broke to all-time lows, I'm like, oh boy, Oh boy, because we've never had this happen in the United States of America, right? We never had inventory this slow with this many people working, and then all of a sudden, here we are. Home demand broke out to pre-cycle highs, so supply and demand equilibrium is that inventory is low, and here it is. So sellers are like, "Hey, we're going to try to make as much money as possible because that's the human thing to do." So I don't think they're going to sit there and think, hey, listen, we're going to take a little bit less just because we could clear. I think they're going to do what the market forces. So the people that are saying this will bring down prices, market forces variable matters more. Trust me when I say this, if mortgage rates were at 3% right now, there's not sellers going, let's just make a little bit less. You know, we don't know. So market forces. So let's like that, throw it in the trash. Hold on. In it. Okay, that's not going to work. But in this case, I do think there is a material change for the buyer because the buyer doesn't know. Now, can we have a situation where there's, let's say, hypothetical, 5 homes in one neighborhood. They're all roughly around the same price. One seller says, hey, listen, we'll pay 2% of the commission or we'll pay 1% of the buyer's commission. And the others say no. Does a buyer go, hey, listen, I have to bring in less. So there's all these things that we just don't know until we see a period of time when it's tested into the system. And it needs a year. It needs at least 12 to 18 months to kind of see this, because you also want to see how this plays out when rates go up and rates go down, right? When demand goes up and down. So my first inclination is always just that. That, you know, for so long, buyers never had to worry about paying their agents. Now it's an issue. And we already, did it take long for this to happen where sellers are like, no, in this kind of market too. Think about it. This is not like home sales are booming. They're going, whoa, we're not paying anything, you know? So in time, it always works itself out, but that to me is the economic impact right away. And then I will wait to see how the data runs on this to get some real concrete information on how this is really impacting the cycle. Because I think you know, for so long buyers never even had to think about this. Now they do, and of course, when you're a first time home buyer, especially when you're have a very low down payment or down payment assistance, you don't have much anyway to start off. So it'll be interesting in that sense, because I think it was like that New York Times article. I believe it was a New York Times article where it was just a shock to the buyer at the end that they have to bring in money to pay the agent, where that was not something discussed before. So I think that'll be the most interesting thing going out in the future for me.
I think, you know, you mentioned like home prices in many ways are subsidized, right? Like we've talked before about how home ownership is one of the biggest wealth creators in the country. And that's not, you know, that's not an accident. It's on purpose. It's the way that the government has incentivized different things, right? Like you get to deduct the interest payment off of your what you paid in interest off your home. You know, the 30-year fixed, which they back, means that you're beating inflation. It also means that as the seller, you talked about the buyer, but as a seller, I mean, all that home equity that you have got in that home, in some ways, it's not really necessarily anything you've done. So we're talking about just the home equity that's happened because of market forces over the last couple of years, not like, oh, you added so much to the house or whatever. And so it's interesting to me that, you know, they, you know, a lot of that is something that they didn't, quote unquote, earn. But I'm with you. There is no way that they're going to be like, oh, you know, let me do something I don't have to do. Except that I feel like if they feel like they're not getting the kind of buyers that they need to, if they're not, you know, if agents aren't prioritizing their house because, you know, they're not offering that. I mean, that's another wrinkle here.
Yes. And this is why I always like to highlight market forces still rule everything. Like for example, 2022, right? The year started at 3% mortgage rates. The year got as high as over 7% mortgage rates. During that span, market forces, even with active inventory near all-time lows, even with monthly supply near all-time lows, price cuts had to happen to sell the product. Not because people wanted to do this, but they had to do this to move the house. Now, we also saw a secondary impact where people just said, hey, listen, mortgage rates are too high. I'm taking my home off the market. Right. So in that regard, I think it's an interesting factor that people forget. Supply and demand economics rule. And when you put your house on the market, you're intending to sell it, right? To move to something else. So it's not like you could sit there for like 3 years. And there's obviously a plan there. So I would say market forces rule, but sellers, man, if rates were at 3%, trust me, they're not going, hey, we could clear a little bit more. You know, they'll take the highest offer possible because, again, human beings will do whatever they want for their own selfish. That's why team higher rates. That's why in 2022, I was like, could you imagine where home prices would be if mortgage rates were still like at 4 or 5%? Okay. I mean, that's one thing that, you know, you think about last year. Last year, we had record low levels of sales at 5 to 6% home price gains. And new listings data, that's terrible market. That's a terrible market. You know, it's just that you can't get sales, you get the price inflation and you get new listings data. That's why this year it's so much better to me because we're actually seeing inventory grow. We're seeing new listings go. That is a more functional market. And I'm so self-biased because of I'm a pro supply person, but yeah, we need to be a little bit more mindful on like the holy angels of American home sellers, like they're gonna know. People are people and they will always do what's in their best financial interest.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So last week we talked about existing home sales. Let's talk about new home sales, which we got yesterday. Interesting, you know, some commentary that we're seeing around is like, you know, I think Bloomberg had it where it was like, you know, the dream era for home builders is over, things like that. Give us your take on the new home sales market.
So the builders got themselves in a very, very unique spot. Right, which they didn't in the previous expansion. I think people who followed my work in the previous expansion will say it's going to be the weakest new home sales recovery ever recorded in history. Like I until years 2020 to 2024 happen, that'll be the case. However, back then we had so much supply and the existing home sales market was cheaper homes geographically everywhere, and mortgage rates were ranging between 3.25% and 5% for a decade. So disadvantage to the builders. Here, boy, inventory hit all-time lows, but mortgage rates spiked up. So the Bloomberg piece, the one thing I disagree with that piece was that the advantage to the builder is still offering 1 to 1.5% lower rates, in some cases 2% lower rates. If inventory increases and mortgage rates come down total, right? The buyer pool that some of the builders are peeling off the existing home sales market, that can go away. But that still needs mortgage rates to come down and inventory to grow bigger out there. It's funny. I constantly mock the housing 2008 crowd because for the last 18 months, they kept on saying 2008 with the builders because the median sales price is crashing. Think about this, everyone. Just close your eyes and think about this. If the median sales price is authentically crashing and the builders are actually, you know, paying big money for their rates, their stock prices would be, and like Toll Brothers looks like Coco, vertical straight up, right? So it's not such a clear thing. The builders, which again, higher rates, team higher rates in 2022 specifically said we needed higher rates to put the builders on their ass. Why? Because they were like canceling contracts and taking the higher bids and all this stuff. Now they said, okay, we're going to make some deals, right? We're going to do some things that could keep the, you know, new home sales going, which is a positive, right? Because they're keeping construction employees. So that with the new home sales market is such a positive story. And the builders are taking advantage of it. But in time, if inventory does grow and there's more choices and geographically existing homes are spread out, they're not clustered in one or two neighborhoods out here, and rates fall, then advantage, disadvantage, that advantage that they're really, really milking right now kind of goes away. But we're not there yet because we're still at 7% mortgage rates. But they had a backlog. That backlog needs to be moved. You know, one of the things in those new home sales reports that I always like, I like to highlight the difference about monthly supply. Like literally people think the over 8 months of supply, those are all homes on the market ready to be bought. There's only 85,000 completed new homes available for sale. Remember, they take a contract and they're waiting for that buyer, you know, to come in at the end. If they're still there, if they could qualify, good. That home is gone off the market. That's not unoccupied inventory. I think that's one of the more confusing things that's been here. And the builders never flood a marketplace. Like even in 2008, even with the biggest home sale and collapse in housing ever, they never even got to 200,000. Completed units for sale. I mean, it's just not, it's most of the inventory in America comes from the existing home sales market. And I think that was one thing that I wish I could have done more in the past, because I just naturally assumed people knew that. And then in the last 2 years, I'm like, oh my God, nobody knows this, because nobody read a new home sales report for 15 years. And that's on me. I assumed an assumption was wrong. And so I always like to highlight that so people could understand that marketplace a little bit better.
I think it's hard to get your mind wrapped around the fact of new homes just are such a tiny part of the market, because as soon as they're sold, the next time they sell, they're an existing home. I mean, it's just a very short part of their life cycle of a home to be in the new home sales.
They are like, as you know, they're baby Godzilla. The existing home sales market is Godzilla, right? You've got the last existing home sales print is 4.38 million on the monthly sales. The new home sales print is 662,000, right? So they can peel off people. And the way one of the ways I try to talk to Wall Street investors on this, I said, think about it in this light. You have 3-4 million people looking to buy homes. And the new home sales, hey, Brad, guys, I have a brand new house right here, you know, and I'll give you 5.25% mortgage rate. It's a little bit more expensive than that, but here it is. And the existing buyer's like, well, I'll take it, right? And those homes that are available for sale right now, that 85,000, you know, the reason that doesn't go up to a million or anything like that is because the builders are here to make money. They manage that supply. They don't put their heads down and build. That's just who they are. They're not the market type. So the new home sales report, you know, there's lots of revisions that happen on these things, but it's been growing. 8% mortgage rates brought that data line down, and we've kind of slowly bounced off that. We'll see how this goes. But again, that is also a sector that can benefit from lower rates. But I think if rates got down to 5.5 or 6%, some of that advantage, disadvantage goes away from them. As long as inventory is up, if total active listings are still very low, and again, a lot of these homes need a lot of work or something, you know, the more affluent home buyer, because the new home sales buyer is actually much older than the existing, they actually, you know, will go there because it's a better product and the rate is cheaper. So I think hopefully that explains the very unique, and you know, trying to tell people, you know, they look at the stocks of all these home builders and everybody says it's 2008, and they go, why is the stock up? That's what it is, right? The builders are selling homes, their profit margins are good, they're not collapsing. We had an 82% crash in new home sales from 1.4 million all the way down to like 200,000. None of that is happening. Reading is a good thing, and don't listen to people on the internet, please.
Well, except us, we're on the internet.
Yeah, but we're fighting the righteous cause, you know. The orc armies of Mordor are out there, and you just got to go out and take them on piece by piece.
So, you know, we've talked about inventory in a couple of different contexts. What did the tracker find? Where are we with inventory for spring?
So the best part for 2024 for me is still new listings data is growing. It's growing just a little bit less than I thought I was hoping for. You know, for example, we're a little bit above 60,000 this week. I was hoping by this time we'd be kind of in the 66 to 68,000 level. We're not there because we were trending at the lowest levels last year in history. And one of the things that I tried to emphasize last year on CNBC that I think officially I'll be on CNBC by the time this podcast comes out. Supply is a function of demand. More people listing their homes can mean that the sales levels can be higher than what people estimate right now. That's why the pending home sales report and the next few existing home sales report will be interesting, because in a sense, the mortgage purchase application data might not accurately account for the sales data in this context, because majority of sellers are buyers. If it's a job loss recession and you see stress, it's a completely different variable, but that's not the case right here. So the next few existing home sales reports will be key. And this is why we've always tried to stress this last year. It's not a good thing that new listings were trending at the lowest levels ever, because that's demand. The whole 4 million level, now that everybody has seen this, you know, for COVID, for 2022, 2023, that 4 million level is really hard to really break. I mean, even it took like 8% mortgage rates, you know, to even break down. We got to 3.85 million. We have so many people now in this country. Our demographics are so much better. It's crazy to think how low sales are, and it doesn't take much to bounce it. So the rest of the year, the new listings data growing year over year is a positive as a function of demand. Purchase application data today, flat week to week, down 16%. If you look at it, it's still trending at very low levels. But there is a chance that we can incur more sales just because of the new listings data that is not captured in that MBA. This is why I always say the mortgage, the MBA data can be confusing at times, because people think it's a one-to-one ratio. It's not necessarily if there's other variables in play. So active inventory is growing, and yet, Sarah Wheeler, I'm still batting at zero. I've my 11 to 17,000 that I talked about last year, that higher rates, and really that's rates above 7.25, which isn't happening. The reason that's 7.25, that's the peak mortgage rate forecast for last year and this year. And even with 7.25% rates heading to 8% last year, I never got one week, couldn't even pull 1 week out. So far this year, it's very mild. It's very orderly. It's orderly on the new listings. And I always tell people, the best way to go against the silver tsunami, the Airbnb bust, and the housing 2008 crowd, everyone, if you wanted to do this, you can do this yourself. 2008 to 2011, new listings data was trending at 250,000 to 400,000 per week.
Per week. I mean, let's underline that. Per week.
Per week. Homies, that was a tsunami, okay? Everyone, right? So what I'm doing now is every weekend, I'm going to show what the new listing is on a Saturday before the tracker comes out. And then I'm going to compare it to the period in 2008 to 2011. Why? Because a society that reads will always have a better educational format than those people who burn books instead of reading them. So this is how we do it. So tactically, everyone gets it. And what's happening right now is my housing crash friends are like, ah, why are you comparing 2011 to... I said, oh my God, do you get it now? Why are you talking about housing 2008 then? Ah, gotcha. Checkmate. You're done, homie, right? So this is how you actually teach people how the new listings data is really good. Because one of the things I always like to tell people is that Mike Simonson's great story with Wall Street during, you know, right, like I think it was 2007, talking to Lehman Brothers, told Lehman Brothers, hey, listen, I got this brand new data line, says we track this. Lehman Brothers looked at him, and I got 85 analysts on this. You know, no, we don't need it. Okay. Mike Simonson walks, sees Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs is like, we're going to short the housing market. Lehman Brothers goes bankrupt. Goldman Sachs makes $10 billion. We're it, guys. I'm telling you, Mike Simonson and myself together, it is not fair. It is literally not fair that we are both working together, because we're so different in that sense. He's so much on the inventory side and new listings, and I'm so much on the macro side. That is a lethal combination. And again, we always say data over vibes, and you're not going to miss anything. We literally cannot miss it because it's such fresh data for everyone. And of course, with Alto's research, you could get every single zip code and every single buyer dining lines. We only share a little portion of the data lines that we do. We talk about it on a national format. We could break things down even more sophisticated. There's why it's a lot of real estate investors actually like Mike Simons's work. So positive for me on the macro side for 2024, that new listings data is growing, inventory is growing. It's not as fast as I would like. I have not hit my 11 to 17,000. I'm going to be so happy if it happens, because I have not hit it one time in 2023 or 2024, but it's orderly and it's a positive story. It's not a negative story. We have to think about supply as being a positive story, because most sellers are buyers. In a job loss recession, that variable changes. If they're stressed, the new listings data will go straight vertical. So we're not there yet. We don't have that data line. And thankfully, jobless claims are still low. So I am so encouraged about 2024 because of that. I would have been miserable if the new listings data was still trending at all-time lows. However, we saw last year that 8% mortgage rates didn't make a new leg lower. This is why all those interviews with CNBC, I said new listings data is a bottom. New listings are going to grow. New listings, don't listen to the mortgage rate lockdown people, right? We're going to be fine on this. And so far, a positive story.
Okay, so give us the exact number. So we're not from that 11, you haven't gotten your 11,000 to 17,000 per week. What is the new listings number?
Oh, no, this is the active inventory that happens. And I think it was 5,000 last week. So we're starting to get into the spring, you know, so we're passing March, you know, April, May, and June. And again, the mortgage rate variable is big here. If mortgage rates go down, demand picks up, you have a very hard time growing inventory. This is why Mike Simonson and myself, we're not mortgage rate lockdown people. We have two different ways of looking at it, but that's how I look at it. When you're dealing with a thin supply marketplace, the demand picks up, supply comes up. What's the variable? If sellers or buyers, most of them, what buyer does not provide you a house when they purchase? It's a first-time home buyer. Why does that matter? If you look at, you know, purchase application data, we used to do this in like our first national presentation. We're like, look at purchase application data since like 2014. Look at total active inventory slowly falling. Why did that happen? Because first-time home buyers finance 90% of their mortgages, right? And that the millennials started to buy in 2013. And in 2013, that data line started to grow and grow. They were the biggest home buyers in 2020 and 2021. This is why, if you're going to blame the very small, tiny Wall Street buyers, you better hate on the millennials, because they were the biggest buyers out there, right? So that's why that inventory channel for me is a little bit different than how Mike looks at it. You don't get much growth in the mortgage demand picks up, right? Because that one buyer does not give you a house.
So interesting. Okay, what else do you, we have just a few minutes. Anything else you want to talk about?
Well, by the time this airs, pending home sales is going to be coming out. And I'll address it on CNBC. But I'm really, really curious to see, do we see a real good deviation from home sales from the purchase application data because of the new listings? And the reason I bring this up, because we literally worked from the lowest levels ever recorded in the history of America last year, right? Remember the whole people were going to sell in panic in 2021 and 2022 was great. Everyone, this is one of the best things I'll remember, the part of the book. Everyone said stock traders, middle-aged men stock traders, the best. Out of all the people, I love them the most. When home prices were falling in the second half of 2022, and then they're like, oh my God, everyone's going to rush to the market to sell their homes because they want to protect their assets and everything. Literally the exact opposite happened. New listings data trended at the lowest levels ever recorded in history. That to me is like one of the top three golden things that I'm going to highlight when the book comes out. That not only did that not happen, the opposite happened. However, that's a negative, right? That's demand. That's why we talked about, you know, in November of 2022, man, it really looks like home sales are going down to 4 million. I mean, we just barely broke under 5 million at that time. So that would have been a collapse. But I mean, if you don't got sellers that are buyers and rates are too high, man, you could have an utter collapse. And it was literally the fastest crash in home sales ever. But when we think about now, boy, if new listings data is growing, you can maybe get a little bit more sales than what the purchase application data is playing. So my article for the existing home sales, did we peak in sales already with that big move? Okay, last year that was the case. But we'll, I think this will be an interesting thing to keep an eye on, especially if rates fall, right? If rates just, my God, if rates just get to 6%. I know Neil Kashkari, the Fed will panic. My God, people are having sex and buying homes. I know that they'll like come out there and go, oh my God, we can't have this. What a John Lithgow's character in Footloose. Okay. Come really? It's like six, really? But I think that to me is the most interesting data line going out in the future, because in theory, we should have already kind of peaked, right? Because the purchase application data is not really growing much like last year, but the new listings data has changed that variable. That is an exciting unit. Can you see how excited I am about inventory growing? Like, can you just feel the passion? Like last year, I'm like, oh my God, nothing could work. But this is a positive. This is a positive for the United States of America, because a country has to function. The housing market is a huge part of that. And household formation and family build, all this stuff. It's such a big part. And we don't need Biden's tax credits, right? I understand why he had to do that. I understand why the White House has to do it. They're hearing it from everyone. Housing inflation, you know, rates are too high. They have to do something, but we don't need it. We just need rates to fall. And just 6% rates can stimulate a little bit of demand where you could alleviate some of that general anger by the population.
General anger. Well, Logan, thank you for sharing your insights. I would tell our listeners, come to the gathering. It's April 21st through the 24th to hear Logan and Mike in person, as well as just an incredible lineup of other speakers. We're going to be doing our podcast live. We're going to be joined by other people on the stage. We're going to do a live Q&A. It's going to be a lot of fun. And Logan, just thanks for being on again.
It is going to be on, and oh, we are going to revisit the mortgage rate lockdown when we go on stage. Oh, I cannot wait. Whew.
I don't think that's on the agenda. I think we have some.
Oh, I make my agenda. Everyone knows. I roll with a different beat.
We do know that. Okay, Logan, talk to you soon. Thanks.
Pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Housing Wire Daily. If you haven't already, we'd love for you to take a minute to rate the show and leave a comment. And make sure to tune in tomorrow for more news and insight.